Test, test, test. All right, here we go. How good, my resident rock and roll biblical connection guy just walked in, Jim Myers here, because when we meet on Tuesday mornings and we have class and what have you, and we visit and study something, he's the one that can always make a Rolling Stones reference to some biblical thing we're talking about. And he did it just this last Tuesday, so I'm not sure if he might fire off with one today. I always get so tickled because there's a real connection there and stuff. So anyways. So I've been hit up by a couple people afterwards, the exhortation a while ago. And most often I just do exhortations based on trying to really focus on what Greg just said. And then I get down and I'm saying, I'm not sure if I made a connection or not. But anyways, I've had two other people come up and tell me kind of, you know, their mantras or those things that, and so Bryce was the first. And Bryce's comment was, if choir was easy, nobody would play football. I think that's a little dig at me, you know, too. But I will say that over the years, two or three of my offensive linemen I coached were the leads in the musical. We had about a 3 or 4 year streak going that they were the leads in the musical. And I always thought that was such a good thing because there's a degree to which I feel like if you can stand in front of an audience and sing, then that takes a great deal of courage. And I always thought it helped them with their confidence. So I can accept that, you know, conditionally. And then Valerie, she comes up and she says, you know, because she instructs and just teaches her kids, says, if you're going to go for it, 100%, all out. And, you know, and I appreciate that. And the truth is, you know, look, hope is a great thing, okay? Hope is a great thing. We often refer to it. But the truth is, expectation is really even better. Oh, I forgot to look. I know that, you know, there's a degree to which you always worry that you're going to have, you know, we're going to be done in 20 minutes. And the truth is, I got to hope that we get finished and all. So good morning. You know, I guess I want to lead off to the other thing that I want to emphasize. I always want to try to look at things from a positive standpoint, as opportunity, we get to, that type of thing, instead of we have to and so on. I'm just always encouraged by Jimmy Bible. You know, she calls me when she's in the hospital as opposed to me calling her, which I should be doing, right? But, you know, we all kind of, there are several of us kind of giggled today because she's at the so-and-so medical resort. That sounds a whole lot better to me than old folks home. And so, you know, a lot of times it's the way we look at it. There used to be this veterinarian at University Avenue where Marty and I, we went to church during college, and we were part of the student group there when we were at UT. And, you know, I don't know if I remember a single thing he said. You know, I'm sure I carry some of those things with me still, but I can't attribute to him. But I think he impacted me because he was always so energetic. He always had a smile on his face. And he had like a bunch of different plaid coats. And I think those plaid coats just spoke to his aura a little bit, the way he was. And so, I would just say that we have a choice in the way that we look at things. And I would just encourage us that let's choose to look at things in a way that's just better. You know, I see Maury's walking in, and one time I get hit up by, this is why I carry a pen so I write names down. I get hit up by Gayla. I'm walking into church one Wednesday night and Bible study, and Gayla said, "Man, what do we have to do, Kyla or Kayla? Kyla. What do we have to do to get Kyla to jump higher?" Because she was a high jumper. And I said, "Well, probably. And we don't need to overcoach this thing. We probably just need to get her a pack of cigarettes." No, I said that facetiously. Okay? Hey, let's not overthink this. Let's relax a little bit. And so it's funny, as I'm talking to, I went and specifically asked our local golf pro, sits over here, Alan, okay. "Hey, what do you go?" And it was a whole deal of not overthinking things. Okay, so anyways, it's kind of my editorial this morning as we get started. That's what I would encourage us. That's the second exhortation, I guess. So the Shema is what we're going to look at this morning. And I mean, when Greg said, "Hey, we're going to do this deal on prayers in summer and different people teach," I called him immediately because I wanted to do that. And partly because I'd just been at another service where that was a big focus. And I would just say that in the beginning, it's something like the best brief practical guide that we can fall back to as parents and as Christians. This is our foundational, this is our starting point. And these six verses we're going to look at today, they're the generational plan for passing on along faith. So here we go. I got to be careful and read my notes slow and try not to skip things and all that. So here we go. The Shema, Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 9. "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. These commandments I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit and when you walk along the road, when you lie down, when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands. Bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your house and your gates." Okay, so I'll just tell you right here, we need those reminders, right? Because right here in the front is my bill for the water bill that I've got to drop off after church, and I'll put it so I'll see it and not forget and have to pay that 10% extra for being late. You know, so. And so we'll talk about that. But Shema itself, Shema the word, means hear or listen. But beyond hearing and listening is really a call to action. Because that's the product. You know, when we tell our kids to listen, it's not just do you hear my words, but in fact, we're trying to elicit a response. Okay? Dare we say obedience. So here's the context. Had to remind myself how to do a PowerPoint last night. Hadn't done one in way over 10 years and all of that. So hopefully it'll work out. Here's the context. So Moses is speaking to the Israelites there in Deuteronomy. They're about to enter the promised land. He's reminding the Israelites of the covenant that God made with their forefathers. And the Israelites are nearing the end of their 40-year journey. They're wandering. We go from Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, sold into slavery. 430 years later, they leave Egypt. In spite of all the miraculous things that are taking place and the way that God is leading them, they wander for 40 years because of their grumbling. And so now the wandering is over and Moses' death is imminent, as these are some of his last words to them. In Jewish traditions, the Shema is spoken daily in the morning and in the evening at Yom Kippur, which is the Day of Atonement, their most holy day of the year. At the end of life, oftentimes, they make this their last words. As they say this from day to day, they cover their eyes customarily. You know, we bow our heads, close our eyes. We do those things that try to make us focus and to eliminate distraction. And so consequently, that's their custom. Over time, the Jewish nation has added two more passages, actually, to be a part of the Shema. Deuteronomy 11, 12, 13 through 21. So if you faithfully obey the commands I'm giving you today to love the Lord your God and to serve him with all your heart, with all your soul, then I will send rain on your land in its season, both autumn and spring rains, so that you may gather in your grain, new wine, and olive oil. I will provide grass in the fields for your cattle, and you will eat and be satisfied. Be careful, or you will be enticed to turn away and worship other gods and bow down to them. Then the Lord's anger will burn against you, and he will shut up the heavens, so it will not rain, and the ground will yield no produce. And you will soon perish from the good land the Lord is giving you. Fix these words of mine in your hearts and minds. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. You know, the truth is, the presence of God is something we cherish and value so much, when in fact, the absence of God is when we turn away and we don't rely on him. We're not dependent on him. So teach them to your children, talking about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates, so that your days and the days of your children may be many in the land of the Lord that the Lord swore to give you, your ancestors, as many as the days that the heavens are above the earth. He reiterates about children, puts reminders in prominent places, and teaching children is the only way we have to pass along generationally God's wish for us. And so finally, then, also in Numbers 15, 37 through 41, this has been added. The Lord said to Moses, "Speak to the Israelites and say to them, throughout the generations to come, you are to make tassels on the corners of your garments with a blue cord on each tassel. You will have these tassels to look at, and so you will remember all the commands of the Lord, that you may obey them and not prostitute yourselves by chasing after lusts of your own hearts and eyes. Then you will remember to obey all my commandments and will be consecrated to your Lord, to your God. I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt to be your God. I am the Lord your God." So here are these three passages, which the Jewish nation used as their foundational principles. In this particular case, the tassels are a reminder. Remember, I brought you out of Egypt. And then also these things here, when you consider these three things, these passages are comprehensive. In fact, they cover all of those Ten Commandments that they are given. But today we're going to focus on Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 9. So verse 4, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one." Here, wrapped up in that, just as we said a while ago with children, listen, here is more than just let it come in your ears and hear the words. But it's really the product of hearing is obedience and action. One God. Monotheism. Exclusive devotion to Yahweh. Every part of our being, our lifestyle, is wrapped up in this. You know, I think back when I was a kid, and, you know, I knew, I was one of those kids, I was a pew baby, Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. If the doors were open, we were there. And it was a small church, probably about like what we are right now. Everybody was old. Actually, I'm going to speak to that because of Greg's birthday today. Okay? I don't believe in old. I just believe in older. I even said that to Brandon and Donna as they were walking in this morning, you know. I mean, you know, that kind of goes back to that state of mind, right? We can. That's a choice we can make. I don't think in terms of being old. I'm just older. You know, what's the best time of your life? The one you're in right now. And when we choose to believe that way, I think we just have a better chance. We see things so much better. This goes back to the Lord our God, the Lord is one. If you want to trace that back to the Ten Commandments, you shall have no other gods before me. You know, and when we talk about making God preeminent, the number one thing, it reminds me in teen leadership I used to teach when we would study values, standards, and principles. Values are those things we hold in high esteem, importance. And look, it's one thing to say this is a value we have. But the truth is we have to step back and look, how do we live our lives? Because how do we spend our time? How do we spend our money? And how do we treat other people? Those are the biggest reflection of values, or those are the true reflection of values. And the standard is absolute. One God. One God that we serve. One God that we love. So we go to verse 5 and 6. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. You know, that first part, it identified kind of a relationship, forgot to say. It was highlighted in yellow, and I still forgot to say it. It's a relationship. And now here's the expectation, the requirement. In fact, if we do this, we could make a case for that's the summary of all of God's law. At the very least, that's our foundation. That's where we start. Now, love is not just an emotional love, but rather it's an allegiance and it's an obedience. It's a relationship. Let's recognize our positions. Used to, when I was coaching, I'd get in trouble every year because, and these coaches, they'll all remain nameless when I speak of them in these ways. One time we got into about the first series of the first scrimmage when I got chewed out because I would say something, and this particular coach, you know, they had like this all-seeing eye, they thought, and they would react to what they thought happened. And I'm sitting there watching it specifically. And if I disputed that or say, no, coach, this is what really happened. It was a bad back block. Sometimes I'd get hit with, let's remember our positions. Or sometimes we'd be sitting there and, you know, the clock's winding down. He's busy coaching that last play. Hey, coach, we need a play. And I'm talking in the headset. We need a play. And then, you know, he'd go ahead and get that play called, and then he'd come marching down and say, let's not forget our positions. Okay? I'm the head coach. You're the assistant coach. You know, that type of deal. Well, here's the thing. It's important we understand this. We can love. We can be in a relationship. We're not equal. God is over all. He speaks of, with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. You know, we could say that's intellect, it's emotion, it's actions. The truth is, what it really means, it's everything about us. It's our whole self. Making sure I'm on the right slide. You know, the commandments to be on your heart, stay at the forefront. This is how we are to dedicate ourselves. This is how we transform ourselves when we dedicate our whole being. And so then, the third portion here, verses 7 through 9. Impress them upon your children. Talk about them when you sit at home, when you walk along the road, when you lie down, when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. We need those reminders, right? You know, that's in the old days, I guess they'd say tie a string on your finger, you know, to remind yourself or what have you. In our pickup, I have this post-it note on the steering wheel. It's bright yellow. And it's, the only thing it has written on it is gas. Okay, now the gas gauge works, but I don't look at that. And so, you know, and I get it when Marty said, I filled up your pickup today. You know, because I'd taken it down towards the end, I think. And I got at least one person in the audience nodding their head in agreement, my wife. But at any rate, so we're sitting there, and so I just written there, gas. And she said, hey, what does that mean? Because it's full. I said, yeah, because that sticker's there. Okay, so it's a reminder. You know, let's face it, I'll bet you, many of you grew up, and in your mom's or your grandmother's kitchens, there might have been some plaque on a wall. And it might have been some biblical saying, right? Anybody have those? You know, go ahead. Oh, you had one? Now I'm struggling to remember, you know, what it was. But you know, and it's, as for this house, we will serve the Lord. It's just those reminders. You know, anymore these days, I knew Greg was 62 today because a notification came up on my phone. Call Greg because it was his birthday. And I can tell you on our calendar, you know, if you're really specific about the way you do those things, you can call up very specific things. All I have to do is hit the word camping, and it pulls up all the dates that we're going to be camping. And you know, even though it's at different locations, then if I want to say Blanco, if I want to say Inks, if I want to say Palo Duro, then it further filters that. You know, these are so handy. We can gripe and complain. You know, Lance and I were talking this morning about the value of Facebook. Look, it's got plenty of things wrong with it, right? Forget all that. Don't look at that. It's really good because it allows us to see good things. So anyways, reminders are important. Tie them as symbols, door frames, gates of our houses, God is faithful to us, we have to be the same. We need to be the same. I'm always struck at the way... So, look, I'm not watching the Aggies last night at 1 a.m. because I like the Aggies, okay? They're playing in the background while I'm finishing up my notes.
They won.
Yeah. So, well, I did. I was there. And it always strikes me because, you know, there's different things when good things happen and to athletes. Sometimes we like to disparage this. Okay, here's another little side note editorial. You know, they cross a plate and then they do this, you know, or something like that. What's that acknowledgement of? I think it's an acknowledgement of God. Now, on the one hand, you know, I've heard other devout Christians say, oh, they're just drawing attention to themselves. You know what? There's a degree to which I'm so glad they do that. Look, you can carry that too far. I get it. But you know what? That means you can be watching sports and be reminded of who? Of God. And guess what? That's where all good things come from. Every good thing we have, everything that we have comes from Him. You know, it says, there's a notation, it was about engrave them on your heart. The truth is, when you engrave things, it's probably something that happens with a degree of repetition to make that engraving complete or to make it full, to make it the best. Teaching children. That's our most important thing. So let me tell you about an experience. We've been to two baby blessings in Austin where Kellyanne and Ryan worship, where they're involved. And I think it's such a cool thing. Because what they do is they recognize families with children that have been born in the last year, in their particular case, a year and a half. And it's so impressive. Because what they're doing there is they're creating a connection with families. There's a reception at the beginning, and a member from the church is assigned to every single family to sit with them and to pray with them at this reception and pray for their family specifically. Now, they're a pretty diverse church. The tech industry and what have you, there's a lot of Middle Eastern. There's quite a few from Africa. We were there one time, and they read scripture that particular morning in five languages because that's how many different people are represented there. And then underneath, you know, on the screen, you could see what the verse was. They introduce each child and family, and it's not about drawing attention to them or what have you, but you know what? When we stand people up, when someone gets baptized here and we stand them up, it helps us to recognize and to know who they are, and we're going to take them into our family. And so that's what they do there. And it's meant as an encouragement. I talked to one of the guys afterwards. I know the preacher and what have you. And anyways, I talked to one of their worship leaders afterwards. And I said, you know, when y'all do that, I get where all of these 27 families, they're not regular attendees necessarily, are they? No. It's a way to get them there and for that body to impress upon them they love them, they want to partner with them, they want to engage with them, and they don't want to take the place of being the parent. But they want to partner with them. This part will make me cry probably, but the very last. The very last family to be introduced this year, the child had died from complications. It was a family that I doubt that they had. I'm not sure. I don't know that they had much background. But it was such an impressive way to impress upon them, we love you. We want to be a partner with you. We are going to stand by your side. And so, you know, you think, well, that's about all the families. No, you know what? Really, it was really about the congregation. Here is your responsibility to teach the children, to partner with these families, to encourage these families, and not take their place, but be that partner. You know, there, and look, I've heard this elsewhere. It's important that children have appropriate adults in their lives other than their parents, because they can be an influence. If you've ever tried to coach your own kid, you know what that means, right? They don't want to listen to you. But that other adult, man, what they say, they're like Nick Saban. And so, you know, there, and look, we've talked about this here. We need to be not engaged on a daily basis or anything of that nature. But you know what? We, as the adults, we need to know the children in our congregation. Vic is so impressive because Vic, he knows all these little kids' names. And look, there are probably others too. And they, but guess what? They gravitate to him because of that. You know, we used to have this graphic in team leadership, and it was just this jumbled mess because up here in the right hand, top left hand corner is a kid, you know, the kid, and then down here at the bottom, and in between there was all of the worst things you could imagine: dysfunction, abuse, neglect. I mean, there were a bunch of them. I wish I could find this and use it, but at the bottom right hand corner, what is it that helps a child overcome all this? An appropriate, significant, influential adult. So as parents, we must exercise personal faith. We must intentionally teach faith. We need to saturate our homes in faith. That's why our children's education here at 711 Broadway is so important. Have you seen what's happening south of town? There's subdivisions popping up everywhere. They're building houses unbelievably fast, and people are moving into those houses. Probably our most surefire way to reach these people is through our children. Teach our children. That's how we pass along our faith. You know, how do we know that works? I'm really proud of the fact I got a video on here. I won't indulge you with it. You know, but it's Anderson. He's standing out in the front driveway. And what is he singing? The eyes of Texas are upon you. Look, we're starting him off right. You know, and look, that's not everything about him. Okay? I noticed yesterday how many he said. He said two or three times, thank you, Dad. Thank you. Guess what? That just didn't come to him innately, but he was taught. And he's not a finished product by any stretch. Okay, he's three. But, You know, and I can remember back, and I can remember back the children's program when Kylie Ann was a kid, Millie Burdett, and various ones. I was amazed at how much they learned and what they knew. And a lot of it's just memorization, okay? I get that. But that's okay. Repetition's good. Fundamentals are fun. But all that being said, we're driving down a road one day. Probably right before we picked up the... can't think of the exact word now. The hitchhiker, who was very charismatic, until we went to pick up the second hitchhiker. He said, "Oh no, what are we? We're not going to pick her up, are we? She might kill us." That's a true story. I could tell it a lot longer, but that's true. Okay, but probably right before that, you know, we're driving down the road and we're teaching Kylie Ann those same things. Okay. And I said, "Kylie Ann, how do you spell quarterback?" Okay, important stuff. And APPLEWHITE. It's like Major Applewhite. It's like, man, she is a genius. Okay, and that was back when, and she was probably 8 or 9 now, but it's like, I didn't even know you knew who the quarterback was, and that's back when. But you know what? Our children learn what we expose them to and what we impress upon them. And so, look, I can say those things. That didn't mean that that was the thing, the only thing that we taught her, okay? There was way more than just that. So, you know, it says, bind them on your foreheads. So here you go. I started wearing my headlamp today, you know, just as to bind something to my forehead and kind of symbolic. But Jewish custom, that's what they would do. They were called phylacteries. And anyways, bottom line is those things they did to remind themselves. And after morning prayers, then they'd take them off or what have you. And so, it said phylactery and the stuff I was reading and studying. And so then I had to go look it up and see what that meant. So... So does that sound familiar? Deuteronomy, the Shema. Well, here you go. The greatest commandment. That's Mark 12 through 28 through 31. I see where I left that off. One of the teachers of the law came and heard them debating. Noticing Jesus had given them a good answer, he asked them, "Of all the commandments, which one is most important?" "The most important one," Jesus answered, "is this: Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. The second is this: love your neighbor as yourself. There is no commandment greater than these." Man, we like to get tied down so much and make this a list of do's and don'ts, right? We got to be careful of that. Love is everything. Guess what? That's not just the people like us. Love is the people most unlike us. Well, somewhere along the line, he said, love your enemies, right? You know, I'm so happy when I hear Greg say, he said it multiple times, we can't insulate ourselves from the world. We have to put ourselves into the world. If we insulate ourselves, we'll just be a shrinking remnant. But instead, we have to be in the world. And this is not pounding people over the head with the Bible, but rather it's relationships, it's connections, it's service, it's love. And guess what? When that's our foundation, when that's where we start, the other things begin to fall into place. We have a chance to be impactful. We have a chance to make a difference. We're fortunate enough we get to, at this stage in our lives, we travel a fair amount. We go to Cancun twice a year. Again, it's just, we've been blessed. Because we go at the same time that I'd say the first week after the state track meet, y'all would understand it more as the first week after Mother's Day, okay, each year. Normally during the Oklahoma game in the fall, because I'm not going to go to that, but I can listen to it or watch it on TV, you know, and so I can do it down there. And then if they get beat, it's a whole lot easier to get over, too. But because we travel at the same time, we've come to know a really big number of people who do the same. And it's like Marty's a magnet to these guys, these people. What's really interesting is there's really a simple answer, because they're not like us. They're from Boston, Florida, Denver, St. Louis, Georgia. But you know what? It's because of the way she treats them. Translated, it's because of the way she loves them. It works. And that's how we have a chance to make a difference. We pass it along through our children. All right, so if we were to go a whole hour, which we start about 5 minutes late, it'd be another 10 minutes. But you know, I've talked the whole time. So I would invite your comments or things that you would have to say that would make it better. And I'm going to back up too before I... There's three guys in particular here. I was looking around the audience this morning. Heck, four. Because Phil too. I used to hate to see Phil show up at the field house when he was the superintendent and I was coaching. You know, look, it wasn't always a bad thing. No, most often it wasn't a bad thing. Hey, I take it back, five, because I see Tom over here too. Because we've been here 40 years now. But Don Graves, Jim Carpenter, Phil, Tom, okay, just say, I'm trying to remember that fifth person I was thinking of. Oh, John Whittle. Did I say him? Okay, John Whittle. John Whittle. Oh, there he is. Yeah. Look, I'm telling you, if you ever come and respond to the invitation sometime and I ask you your name, okay, don't be offended. Just understand that all of a sudden we've been hit with this really serious thing, and I want to make sure I say it correctly. And so I may ask you your first name. I don't care if I have known you for 40 years or what have you, okay? Yeah. So, but you know what? That whole deal about generational teaching, I was a kid when I was 23. And their influence and their teaching has made a difference. And then as I go further back to when I was a younger kid, I can name other people. That's how we pass along the Shema. Okay, go ahead.
There must be some ways to integrate the children with the adults.
How's the best way? How do we integrate children and adults? I think the coolest room in this whole building is right outside there, that foyer. If you think back to our old building, we would stand between rows and talk to people, and there was a little bitty foyer. I'm telling you, and look, I know, they go and separate themselves and what have you too. Here's the thing. You don't have to impact all of them, Jody. What if you just impacted one? Because what if we all impacted one? They would all be impacted, right? You know, sometimes this whole notion gets to be overwhelming because we got to think, we got to go save the world. No. We save them one at a time. We influence and impact them one at a time. And guess what? Collectively, that's how we make a difference. Thank you. Yes, sir. Yeah, that's a good question, and I agree 100%. We can tell them and say to them, well, the number one, we have to model it. That's the number one thing. Let's model that. And I would say, too, you know, here's another one of those good things about Facebook, okay? Because I know used to when you'd teach kids, you'd be frustrated and you'd be just at wit's end, man, I'm not making a difference on this kid. I'm not impacting this kid. Well, the truth is, they don't always get it at the rate we want them to get it. Sometimes it may be just 15 or 20 years later. But they get it. And I think, too, along that line, that whole deal of having that connection with people. I mean, look, it's something we could all work on, right? But, you know, I felt a special connection. I'm starting a race earlier in the year as a track starter and all that. And there's two kids particular and from here. And when I see them and I'm up there, and I'm not talking Christianity to them, love each other and all that stuff. It's more of the notion of, hey, you need to beat that guy. You know, that type of deal. But seriously, when I see those kids, they see me. There's a little connection that we have just because of here and knowing each other from here. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
My kids were small. Of course, I'm going to teach them how to swim. No. Total disaster. Because all they wanted to do was play and crawl on me and jump off of things. And, you know, so, but as soon as we got into lessons, they totally began. They always learned in like 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, that's right. That's why you can't afford to coach your own kids a lot of times. You know, and everything. Mark. That's right, 100%. And so I would say also another thing that, so Coach Denny, he used to, at the end of every practice, before every game, before we went out for the kickoff, before we went back out for the second half kicked off, after the game was over, I mean, ad nauseum, he would ask us, he would say what he had to say, but then he would call on every single coach. Kyle, what do you have to say? And his whole notion there, and I think this speaks to what you're saying. He was not so naive as to believe what he was going to say would impact everyone. But collectively, something that another coach might say would strike a chord. I mean, that happened to me. I'd be sitting there and another coach would say something. I'd say, man, that's tremendous. And so that's why I say collectively, that's how we make a difference. So final thoughts, because we got to cut you loose here. Remember what God has done. God chose Israel above all others because he loved them. Israel, we, in return, love God. We are God's chosen. Look, Christ's ultimate sacrifice. We sang about it today in different words and different songs, and that sacrifice and the mercy and the grace that is extended to us, how can we help but love God in return? And I think the repetitive nature of this and reminding ourselves of these things is so important, so as we don't forget. We don't just kind of slide away. The last thing, loving God does not make our obedience to other commands unnecessary. It makes our obedience possible. Thank y'all for your attention today and appreciate it. And we're done. Have a good day. Happy Father's Day.